RFN episode 297. I know the show number. With me today is our podcast editor and new friend, Guillaume Veillette.
Bonjour.
And special guest today, because if I'm hosting, that means Johnny and John must not be here, Mr. Billy Berghammer.
Hello. I have returned.
Thank you for coming on, Billy. Twice now.
Yeah, no problem.
So is it true that Johnny invited you on the podcast and then ditched you unceremoniously?
How did he know?
Yeah, well, I got a text like a couple hours ago. Hey, man, Lindemann can't be on, so can you be on? I'm like, yeah, you know, I can do that. And then 5 minutes before we were supposed to start recording, I get another text. Hey, man, sorry, I can't be there. I left my keys at some hippie show, jam show. Which I'm surprised you'd lose track of what was going on in your life when you go to those hippie shows, from what I've heard, at least. So,
you know, it may be somewhat consciousness altering. I'm not sure.
That's what they tells me. That's what the kids say.
So. Yeah, there's like a haze in the air that can kind of change everything, from what I understand, or something along those lines.
So thanks a lot, Mets. Way to go.
The good doctor has failed us yet again.
Yes. All right.
So. We're going to go ahead and get on with new business. And as our guest, Billy, why don't you start us off?
Guillaume, I know you were at E3. James, you were not at E3. You know, I guess I'm curious because everybody pings me because, you know, I started the site, you know, and asked me what I thought of E3. And I'm curious to hear someone on the home team and someone that was actually at the show, like, your thoughts on everything. Like, I spent a good chunk of time in the Nintendo booth. Fortunately, I have good friends there that will sneak me in behind closed doors areas. So I can play off the show floor and not have to fight the crazy crowds. But you know, I'm curious to hear what you guys have to say, especially after, you know, some of the remarks that, you know, Reggie has said, as far as Nintendo fans will always be hungry and they're insatiable and, you know, blah, 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 and all that sort of crap. You know, I'm curious to hear what your guys' thoughts are on that.
Well, Guillaume, you were there, so why don't you go first?
Really, like, I'm new to E3. Like, it was only my second time there. And so I don't know how it used to be in the past, but, like, the show this year was probably underwhelming considering that they had new hardware to show and actual games for it. But compared to last year, it wasn't that much of a step down, I don't think. We've talked a lot about the E3 so far, and like everything still stands, you know, like it seemed like there was something missing, like they tried to spread the news over like two special conferences, and you know, they really didn't seem to have enough content to really fill that time up.
And the Nintendo Directs, yeah.
Yeah, and they seemed to only, it just seemed like poorly planned almost. But I, like, overall, like if you look at their conference, it was very underwhelming. But if, like, I just take into account the time I spent at their booth, which was almost like 3 days, and I played everything and I had tons of fun and I have several games that I'm looking forward to buying, I'd say that, like, they had the games, they just did a poor job showing them.
I mean, I think what I'm really curious about, because, like, you know, Reggie said in the beginning of the press conference, or the actual Nintendo press conference, not the three peripheral ones that they did, but, you know, he's like, yeah, we've got whatever 24 games we're going to be showing you, and I'm like, awesome. You know, I'm like, that's great. And I was doing a countdown on Twitter because, like, great. Nintendo Land, I think, is going to be a lot of fun. I totally agree with you. Actually, after reading Neil's impressions just from the New York event that he was at, I am even more excited for that. I barely touched it at E3 this year because most of those games I played last year. But I know that's going to be a lot of fun. I think it definitely strikes a chord with the older Nintendo fans that bought a Wii, that probably touched, you know, played some of the, you know, virtual console stuff, or, you know, they played Mario or Zelda. And, like, I think that's a perfect way to suck them in deeper into actual games instead of, like, you know, just party game sports crap, you know, that we've already done before. So I think is fine. Pikmin, I thought, is great, but it didn't play very well with the the Wii U controller. I mean, I know they're still...
No, it didn't.
I know they're still optimizing that, but they kept trying to push the Wiimote Nunchuck on me, and I'm like, no, I want to play with this new controller that is supposed to be so awesome, and, you know, it just didn't really play very well. Mario, I thought, was fantastic. I did not play the Platinum game, the Project P100 or whatever, but I already know that that's something I'm going to be interested in. So I guess, you know, when you focus a lot of energy on a rehash of Batman that is old, I really don't care. Assassins, actually, the demo that I saw of Assassin's Creed behind closed doors at Ubisoft, I saw it on Wii U, and it looked great. It looked fine. You know, and what's interesting about that version is that you can take all the HUD elements and drop them on the controller, but I don't know if I would even want to do that, per se, and have to do touchscreen things to bring out a crossbow or something like that, because I don't know if you've played Assassin's Creed before, but there's too much going on, especially when you get surrounded with dudes. I'm not going to sit there and take my eyes off the screen and look at the touchscreen to find a small icon that I'm supposed to push to switch something.
They always attack one at a time, so I think you'd be fine.
They do that, which is kind of ridiculous.
I think this one they're actually going to be more active. So
I'd like to see that.
I think I read that somewhere, but I could be wrong. But needless to say, you know, especially if you're... Say you have to switch something in the fly when you're doing one of the assassination attempts. Like, you screw up once, and everybody's alerted, and you're screwed. So...
Yes.
I don't know. That's fine. But, like, as far as Reggie saying that Nintendo fans are insatiable, well, dude, you didn't show a lot of stuff. There's always supposed to be that one game that Nintendo has that shows why you want this new system and why this new control scheme matters. You know, Luigi's Mansion did it for GameCube.
Right.
You know, Zelda on Wii and Wii Sports, perfect for the Wii. They just don't... They did not really show me anything that was so revolutionary for this controller. Hey, maybe it's there in Nintendo Land. I don't know. Great. I guess I want, you know, I expected more, you know, no sports games announcements, even though EA says there's going to be, you know, it's like, why am I maybe buying this system for games, especially third party? Like, I don't know. You know, I don't know if my friends are going to, if I'm going to be able to see people online. I don't know, because the whole online thing is just a big mystery. And, you know, they said that they're going to, this is the system for the core, you know, this is for the core gamer. We want to get the hardcore gamers back into Nintendo systems. And this year seemed to fall flat as far as showing that. I think everybody was kind of taken back by that. Pikmin, I think, is great, but Pikmin is such a niche game. I just don't see that pulling in the numbers that, you know, that game I don't think is going to sell millions and millions of copies. I know I'll be there on day one. I love me some Pikmin, but I guess I'm confused.
Sure.
Quite honestly, like, I don't think that Reggie believed himself what he was saying about the gamers just being insatiable and not having a reason to be disappointed. I think this was the same Reggie that on the year that they released Animal Crossing and Wii Music said that they had tons of games. You know, like, I think he said it because he has to say it.
Sure. Sure.
Yeah. I mean, from the outside looking in, which even this year was incredibly painful, but what I found to be sort of going with what Guillaume said earlier, which is it felt like there was content there that just wasn't presented to me. I didn't get to play Nintendo Land, obviously, but all I really got to see anything about, if I didn't, you know, deal with the site constantly, was the one game they showed during the press conference. Now, there were four playable, I think, and, you know, they really only showed one in any detail. Like I said, they showed Batman a lot. They didn't even show Project P100. That came later.
No, but I think they buried that. They didn't have it in the press conference because, it, you know, from what I saw, it seems like Pikmin, so...
Yeah, I understand. I mean, cause they could have put it... They didn't even put it in, like, the teaser reel, though. I mean, it just wasn't there.
Right.
And the Wario game they didn't show any of.
Yeah, but that would be really easy to confuse with Nintendo Land.
Sure.
Yeah, I can understand that. But to that point, though, it feels like they have some duplicative things going on here. Like, there's... It just doesn't feel like there was a coherent message brought to a point that says, this is why this system is for you. And as a 3DS owner, that was incredibly frustrating, because for me, if I really wanted to see things about the 3DS. I didn't care that it's all about the gold, as I have mocked on this show every time since they said it. Deservedly.
Which one? The golden...
No, New Super Mario Bros. 2, which they pointed out, and this time it's all about the gold.
Yeah, I was calling it Golden Shower, but... that's what I said during the press conference. We were joking around with Johnny. I'm like, that's what they just showed. They just showed Super Mario Golden Shower. That's fantastic.
During the live chat for the site, somebody pointed out that Mario must have joined the 1% in the interim. And another person compared it to, oh, the ultimate cash in New Super Mario Brothers game is actually about Mario cashing in. Perfect.
Well, and if you think about it, there's going to be 3 Mario games,
yeah,
in theory, coming out this holiday. And
yes.
I don't know if you can beat Mario to death. I mean, granted, I'm excited. You know, the Wii U one, I played against someone from Team Nintendo that I know, and we had an absolute blast. Like, he was totally, you know, screwing with me and trying to, you know, trip me up by placing platforms in just the worst places ever. And it was really fun, but I don't know if that's going to be fun throughout the entire game. I mean, that was just, you know, one quick sitting, but I guess people were expecting more new, and what they got was a lot of the same stuff we've seen before. It's definitely, as far as perception, you know, and Nintendo does this, it does whatever they want, and that's fine. Yep. That's how, you know, Nintendo fans are used to it, but I think they can't be surprised when people are frustrated and confused.
In a way, though, I do understand their point of view, because they did have games to show, but, like, it really is a problem of perception, because, like, I don't think there's anything really wrong about having a 2D Mario on the 3DS and a Wii U. It's just that we're getting them at almost the same time. But, like, sure, we don't really think that we're going to get, like, 3 other Mario games next year. And then the year after that, like, it's probably, like, we're getting...
I mean, we had 3 last year.
Well, yeah, but I'm talking about platformers, though. Like, sure, we can get Mario Golf or Mario Kart next year, and, like, it's going to be the same thing. But, I mean, like, we're, as far as 2D
sure
Mario platformers go, we're probably done now. And we probably won't hear about them for the next 5 years. So, like, it's really just, like, a bad timing and a bad presentation overall.
No, I'm fine with that.
Well, I'm sure there's the whatever the Galaxy team for a 3D Mario. I'm sure they're hard at work at something for next year.
Right.
You know, but that's just a lot of 2D Mario. And for them not to even interact with each other, which I think is ridiculous.
Like, oh, that's insane.
It just doesn't make any sense. But, I mean, who knows? There could be a Nintendo Direct where we find out all these awesome things that we've been waiting for. I don't know. I just don't. Outside of Nintendo Land and Pikmin, I didn't really see too much. I mean, I need to know more of where my money's going when the system comes out. You know, in Iwata today, or whenever that came out from the investors thing, it's talking about the why the Wii didn't really do well in the last 2 years, and that third parties. This happens. This hasn't changed for like 3 console cycles.
No.
The N64 didn't have shit for the last like year and a half.
More than that.
It was like it was like Paper Mario, and then I think
Dr. Mario.
Majora's Mask came out the same day as the PS2.
And then they released Dr. Mario, which was like the worst Flash port I've ever seen. Like, it was seriously, it was awful. And but yeah, that system, you know, and I love my N64, but like, it was just the way it just totally petered out. And the GameCube was the same way.
Yep.
So I don't know. It's they're gonna have a very interesting road ahead of them, especially. You know, right now we're looking at what? Nintendo Land will probably be the pack-in if they're
probably smart.
And then Pikmin will probably be a launch title, and New Super Mario Brothers U will be a launch title. And that there's your Nintendo lineup for the holiday.
And that's not a very diverse lineup.
No. I mean, it's just they're going to need more muscle to go in, especially when they're going to be wrestling against Halo and Black Ops at the same time, plus Assassins, which is, you know, those are 3 titles. That's 350, you know, or that's $150, you know, right there.
2 of those titles are going to be in the Wii U, though. I don't know if they're going to be there day and date with the other versions, but, I mean, they are getting Call of Duty and...
Assassin's Creed, yeah. But, I mean, if I already own a system, that's not impetus for me to buy a new system to play them.
Sure, right? And if my friends are playing Assassins on Xbox... I might want to be on that one so I can play multiplayer with them on Xbox. You know, and the whole online thing just is silly that we haven't seen anything about that. But not only that, but what I also think is ridiculous is we still haven't seen really any official specs.
That's not entirely surprising.
Do they really want to wait till, you know, somebody in Korea disassembles this thing and we find out exactly what's in there? I mean, maybe that's probably what is going to end up happening, but...
It is what it is.
It is what it is, but I was curious to hear what you guys were thinking, so...
That's enough E3 talk. Let's move on to games we've actually played. So, Billy, what have you played recently?
What have I played recently? I just finished up with Gravity Days, or Gravity Rush, for the Vita, which I really loved. It was my game of the show at TGS last year. It was probably one of the primary reasons why I picked up a Vita outside of, like, Luminous. And I was very impressed with it. Originally, that game was made... It was in development for a couple of years for the PlayStation 3, and then they moved it over to Vita. Well, I think Sony would be silly not to also release it on PS3. But the tilt functionality and how you manipulate gravity is really, really fun. I mean, as a person who is a big fan of cats, you get your magical powers from a cat, for Christ's sake. I mean,
yeah, so at a really high level, can you explain the game for people who aren't aware of it? Because this game didn't really get a ton of coverage,
which is frustrating. You know, so you're basically this girl cat, and the land that you're from is falling apart from these beasts and things that are in the universe. And so, by collecting certain things, you kind of put your world back together. And so you get these magical powers from this cat. Her name is actually Cat, but, this cat gives you these powers where you can bend gravity, and you can, with the actual focal point, or what you're targeting, you can switch the gravity to be, that's the actual bottom. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
So you float over, you know, you can float over to different areas. You can access a bunch of areas. But one of the things that really, really nailed it for me was it had this whole orb collecting thing, which by collecting orbs, you can upgrade different abilities. But it had totally has this Crackdown vibe. And like, you basically get into a new area or a new level and you start seeing orbs all over the place. And, you know, the characters on screen are like, you should do this. And I'm like, screw you. I'm going to go collect a bunch of orbs for like an hour because it's fun. And that's what, you know, and I just kept doing that. But, you know, the combat, the camera is a little wonky and crazy because you're changing the gravity and where the center of everything is. So sometimes it gets a little confusing and it does take a little while to get used to. But once you get used to it, it's really solid. The art style is beautiful. I mean, it's definitely a super polished game, but you can tell that it has console roots. I mean, that's the one thing that I'm a little worried about the Vita, because Sony wants to keep pushing these kind of AAA console experiences, long play experiences, onto a portable, and I just don't think that works. I mean, people play portable games because they have a quick few seconds that they can, you know, play a match of Mario Tennis or rip through a level in Mario 3D Land. They don't, I mean, the game was like 20 hours long. Like, it's huge, you know, and which fortunately the Vita has really good sleep mode. So instead of like completely powering off the system, you just tap a button and it's asleep and you're fine. But, you know, the levels are really big and, you know, some of the quests are fairly long. So it's not, you know, I played it on the couch, but, you know, normally I don't, if I'm home, I'm playing a game on my TV, but this is the only way I could experience this game. So that's why I played it. But, if you have a Vita, I highly recommend it. I think it's fantastic. I hope they do bring it over to PS3 at some point. If they expect to try to have any real major sales on it, I would definitely bring it over, but, it's really good. I really, really recommend it.
So with the tilt controls, or how do they feel? Does it feel like, I mean, what I played really briefly was on a demo kiosk that was locked down, which is about the absolute worst way to play this game.
Yeah, that's awful.
So, like the only thing I could compare it to a little bit was like the Shield Pose demo from last year's E3.
I like the tilt controls. I try not to use them too much because I want, and it's kind of like when you're playing Ocarina of Time on the 3DS, where what I used it for was just for like fine controls. So, you know, when I brought up the bow in Zelda, you know, I would lock on, or I would target the best I could with the stick and then just raise it or lower it just a little, just a touch, you know? And that's kind of how I used it for Gravity Days.
So it's more just as an extra bonus for control than the actual primary means of control.
Oh, right. Yeah, absolutely.
That makes more sense then. Because it feels like if that was going to be a portable game, which seems like they're not super concerned with, that would be really unpleasant.
Well, because you have to take your finger off the right stick to do some of the actions, you know, and the right stick obviously controls a camera. So to do more quick fine controls, you can also use the tilt sensor so you can stay focused on the buttons. But, you know, I switch back and forth, but they're pretty good. But that's why, I mean, it was obvious that it was a six-axis thing on the PS3 controller. So that's why it worked really well that way. And I think it would work a little bit better with an actual controller than playing it on the Vita, so you actually get the full screen experience. You know, once you start tilting the screen, even though the Vita is not 3D, you're still not getting the, you know, you're not looking at the complete screen. You know, you're looking at it tilted. So, and the action does get a little frenetic. So, you know, being able to see everything at the same time, I think is very important. But let's see what else. I played Rhythm Heaven briefly. I suck at it. And I need a lot more practice time with it, but I finally nabbed a copy of that. And I also picked up Mario Tennis for 3DS, which I need to play more of. I love Mario Tennis. I just don't know if Mario Tennis warrants a $40 game. It's unique and it's got online and that's great. Fortunately, I got it at a little bit of a discount. So, that's why I jumped on it. Cause I love the series. I think it's really fun. It took away a lot of the supers that they had, the super shots, what, in the GameCube version, I think?
Yeah.
That just wrecked the game.
Yeah, the unblockable.
Yeah, they're just stupid. And so this is kind of the best of both worlds. You know, it's really fun. I like the color mechanics when, you know, the different color shots are mapped to certain face buttons. You know, it just, you pull off a better shot when you match the color to the button, so.
Oh, that's interesting. That wasn't like that in the previous versions, right?
No, I don't think so. But it's you know, it's tennis. But it's, at its, you know, at its core, it's still Pong. You know, I mean, it's not like it's...
it's true.
Yeah, you know, I hate to dumb it down to that, but that's the reality of it. But if you like Mario Tennis, I think it's fun. I do want to try it online against friends, but none of my friends actually have it. So,
I played the demo of it at PAX East, and I was not convinced. Like, it really seemed like more of the same, and I couldn't figure out what would make me buy this version, except for the portability and perhaps the online over like the N64 version that you can get on the Virtual Console. Mm-hmm. But like, it really plays the same. And like, someone asked me like, "So, how was it?" And all I could say was like, "Well, you know, it's Mario Tennis."
Exactly.
It was like playing a very, very early opponent in Mario Tennis. That's all I could get from the demo.
Yeah, I would like to see how it is when you're actually playing a real opponent. I mean, you know, I'm playing all the early stuff, so it's like I'm kicking the crap out of everybody, and, you know, I'm curious, you know, find AI characters. But where Mario Tennis really shines is when you're playing multiplayer, so mm-hmm. especially local. So I'm looking forward to trying that out. But I'm worried, you know, and I know Iwata always says that, you know, he doesn't want to do the cheap games, but I think that game would have a lot more chance if it was like $10 on to download it instead of $40 retail package. I think more people would be inclined to. This is the multi, you know, how many times we played the same formula. It's not really, outside of some angle changes that you can do by, you know, you can go over the shoulder view if you raise your 3DS, which really I don't like. So I don't know. It just, I don't know if it, as I said, I don't know if it warrants a $40 purchase. So
no, I think that's fair. I mean, there's a reason I don't own it, and that's pretty much it.
Right, but you've got also, like, there was a new Virtua Tennis, I think, that came out last year, or maybe Top Spin, I'm not sure. Maybe both, actually. And those were full console games, right? And I think they were trying to retail for $50. So I don't think that Nintendo is alone there, but I think that whatever, like, I don't remember which game's demo I played on PSN, but like, they did try to have some sort of meaty campaign where you would build up your character and, you know, his stats and try to go through like a whole career. And that's what's missing from this Mario Tennis, right?
Yeah, they had the whole, you know, Camelot made the whole RPG element thing, which is kind of cute, I guess. Mm-hmm.
It was fun.
I know some fans really liked it. You know, I love Camelot. I think they do, you know, they definitely have golf and tennis down. So, but I think they would just have a better chance at selling it if it was cheaper.
No, right. I think there's probably an argument to be made of, you know, what's the comparative gain in the number of units versus the cost you lose or the price you lose in lowering the price.
Mm.
But it's not an experiment Nintendo seems willing to engage in.
But outside of that, it's been kind of a quiet, I mean, outside of the games that I've been playing for work that I can't talk about, it's been kind of a quiet summer as far as releases. I'm ready for Madden to come out, and I'm ready for all the, you know, the early fall games. I'm ready, you know, very much looking forward to it, so.
Yeah, we still have a ways to go before any of that stuff starts coming up, though, unfortunately.
Well, NCAA is right around the corner, and then, you know, once August hits, Madden's out the first couple weeks, then you get all the EA Sports titles. Borderlands isn't too far out in the distance. It's coming. It's also interesting to see how many games were announced for spring of next year.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which I still say a lot of those, some of those games, we've probably already played next-gen games and we're not aware of it because, you know, not all of those games can fit in spring. I'm sorry. It's impossible. And so they're either going to be moved to summer or next gen. That will happen. That's it for me.
All right, so Guillaume, what have you been playing this week?
All right, well, I had a 3-day weekend. It was Canada Day last weekend, so I celebrated my country by playing some video games.
Is Canada Day kind of like Boxing Day Part 2?
That makes absolutely no sense.
That sounds like a Stallone movie.
Boxing Day is like the Black Friday that you guys have. Like, it's the day after Christmas, and it's, you know, just sales.
I will always tease Canadians, but I'm a huge hockey fan, and I have a lot of friends from Canada, so I always bring up Boxing Day just as some weird thing to bring up, because that's, you know, we're American, we're dumb, we don't know much about what everybody else does, we just hear these random holidays and make fun of them, so sorry, my apologies.
It's all right.
That's our Canadian segment of the show.
Anyway, so, yeah, I spent my day off just playing video games with my girlfriend. And, like, she owns a Wii. She has played by herself through New Super Mario Bros. Wii. So, you know, she's pretty good. She knows what she's doing. But gaming is not her main hobby. I was looking for co-op games that we could play together. And we decided to play Plants vs. Zombies. It's one of those games that I got through PSN Plus for free, but I had played it already on PC. That game is pretty good, right? Like, it's got nice, cute graphics, and it's got a nice sense of humor, and, like, there's nothing really wrong with the gameplay, but, like, the first time that I played through it, I found this one surefire strategy of having these special types of mushrooms that would basically destroy everything in their path, and, like, it kind of made the game a little bit too easy. Like, they were an easy exploit to finish off the campaign. So, like, I wouldn't have paid again to play through it, but since, you know, PSN Plus gave it for free, I downloaded it. And so, for the first time, I actually got to try co-op. And it was challenging at first, because she had never... I don't think that she had ever used a PlayStation controller. So that's a little bit more intimidating than a Wiimote. You know, there's more buttons, there's more things that, like, if you're not used to twin sticks, which this game doesn't really use, but still, like, it can be intimidating. But she picked it up pretty quickly, and it was just a matter, really, of deciding who does what. Like, we basically shared resources, and so, like, I would plant the sunflowers, and she would plant the walnuts for defense. Yeah, like, sometimes, like, I lack patience a little bit. Because when you know exactly what you're supposed to do, you know, sometimes like you feel, oh, it would be perhaps a little bit easier if I was doing everything by myself. But like, so like, I had to, you know, be mindful of that. But like, she, you know, like, pretty soon, like, she was really a pro at the game. But like, Plants vs. Zombies, like, it's one of those games that I think got perhaps a little bit too media time for what it's actually worth. Like, I felt like, I remember distinctly at the time when I played through it and was like the hot thing. I was listening to various podcasts at the time, especially on the 1UP network. And they kept talking about like, oh, I just got the XBLA version. Like, I'm buying this game again. I already got it on iPad and I had it on PC and I'm buying it a third time. And around that time, there was like Final Fantasy My Life as a Dark Lord, mm-hmm. which is a more straightforward, in a way, tower defense game. But like, that game I really fell in love with because I thought like, wow, this is actually the appropriate amount of challenge. You really have to think your way through. Like, you can't just get through it by using the same tactic over and over again. And I was kind of frustrated by the fact that all these journalists were basically, I don't know, quote unquote, wasting their time playing the same game over and over again. Uh-oh. But I mean, like, I understand people do whatever they want with their free time. Like, they don't have a responsibility to try out these WiiWare games that no one else is playing. But at the time, I thought, like, wow, this is really, like, come on, guys. Like, can't you talk about something else? I, you know, like, Plants vs. Zombies is cute, but can we get over it now? You know?
So now that we've thrown out the fighting words, is anybody here willing to respond?
Yeah, you're crazy, man. Like, I sound like I went to one of those hippie shows that Johnny, you're crazy, man. No, but I think I played through it originally on PC and I loved it. I thought it was great. You know, and I usually don't like to rebuy games. I'll be totally mm-hmm. honest with you. But I did rebuy it when the iPad came out because on a controller, I don't feel like I had as fast as response time, you know, to dropping different items or things in the field, you know, because you have to click, 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 or, you know, I mean, you had to, it just, you didn't have that same kind of mouse precision, you know, and quickness, right. Especially later on. So that's why I was like, iPad, great. And, you know, and to be honest, when the iPad 1 came out, and this was one of the launch titles, it was one of the better games that was actually out for the system, you know, and it was an easy game to show people. And as a portable game, I like it because waves are over pretty quickly. Even at the later levels, when the shit really starts hitting the fan, you know, waves are over rather quickly. So, you know, but That's the only reason I bought it again, and I go back to it and play it once in a while because I like trying out some of the items that I might not have purchased, you know,
right.
in the first time that I played through it. So I think it's fine. I don't understand why did it come out for DS or 3DS or something like that?
Oh,
like,
I believe.
I just don't know why, you know, outside of the fact that maybe it's easy to port to stuff and it probably still sells, but I mean, PopCap has this amazing formula to make these quick experiences really, really easy. I mean, people went nuts over Peggle, you know, and
yeah.
I played the crap, you know, especially when Peggle on iPhone dropped to 99 cents. I'm like, I'll throw a buck at this and see how good it is. And it's awesome. And I've played both, you know, I've played the different versions on Steam. Like, I really think it's a lot of fun, but it's that really quick, you know, it just kind of, it hits that certain point for me that it's something simple that I don't, you know, those games I played at a time where I did not have time to play really in-depth experiences. I would maybe have 15 minutes before I went to bed that I could crank out a level or two, and that's when those games came out. or at least that's when Plants vs. Zombies came out. It was just really easy to play through it in a week, you know, when I had just a small amount of time, so.
Right, but it was weird. Like, I mean, like, around the time that Plants vs. Zombies came out, like, there was different journalists were talking about how they had been on the Peggle train for a while, but they never dared talking about it, you know, and, like, this sudden, like, PopCap outpour of love. Okay, it seemed to all come at the same time, and like it seemed to be all that everyone's talking about, and I found that really, really weird. And at the same time, like I understand that they're quick and easy games, like you can, you know, get in, get out, and like it's perfect when you've only got a couple of minutes and you don't have time for longer games. But like, how many games does that describe, this kind of like quick time waster that you can, you know, like there are a lot of good games like that that came out across all platforms. And I guess, like, perhaps, like, while people were playing Peggle for the third time, like, I was playing Bitrip Runner. I don't know. Like, I'm not really a PopCat hater. Like, I think, as I said, like, Plants vs. Zombies is a good game. And, like, even playing it, like, last weekend, like, I had fun. And, like, the music is great. And, you know, like, it's got definitely style to it. And it's definitely, like, a solid game, but it just seems disproportionate just how much it got talked about, and I don't know, like I have kind of a problem with that.
So really, it seems to me more like the issue is that not necessarily that it gets too much attention, it's more that things don't, other games tend to get missed.
Yeah, and also, I mean, it has its flaws, and I didn't really hear anyone talk about them. So I just, like, I felt a little bit, not betrayed, but, you know, like, I... No, but, like...
Et tu, IGN?
But seriously, like, no one talked about the whole do the same strategy over and over again, and you're going to get through this game. And I stumbled upon it maybe by accident, I don't know. But, like, once I saw that it worked, it's kind of like the equivalent of being able to always beat the opponent in a fighting game by always pressing the same button, you know, by always doing the same move, except that at the time it wasn't even multiplayer, so you can't even fall back on that, you know?
I could win a lot of love from the fighting game community by making a Soul Calibur joke there, but I'll defer.
I can see your point on that. I mean, you know, I think I know my strategy of where I place certain plants in the beginning of the game. And then once I have the later plants, you know, I know how I protect my lanes, I guess. Mm-hmm. And, you know, if I died or, you know, if I lost something, I would adjust it a little bit. But for the most part, I played the same way in each of the levels until it got a little crazier towards the end. But
right.
Yeah, I guess I can see that. I don't know. I guess I still had fun the first time I did it, you know.
Sure.
I like it when games tell me I'm smart and I'm awesome.
That's fair enough. So moving on, I understand you also played another game where you all, I don't want to steal your thunder, so go ahead.
Like, after that, we eventually, we got a little bit tired. It took a long time, but we did get tired of playing Plants vs. Zombies. So I wasn't sure exactly what game I wanted to play. Like, she had started Wind Waker, and I thought, like, okay, well, like, why don't I just watch you play that for a while? But instead, we decided to play Super Mario Galaxy. And she had tried it before and couldn't really get into it. Like, adding the third dimension in there really makes the game a lot more complicated or to grasp when you haven't really grown up with the shift to the third dimension. Still, like, she picked up the controller, and I was, like, her co-star. I was using the pointer and grabbing all those, what are they called again? Star bits?
Yep.
And just basically, like, using the pointer to perhaps, like, show her the right direction to go, which is helpful when the camera keeps shifting around and, like, the up becomes left, becomes down. So that was pretty good. And actually, I'm disappointed that Johnny is not here, because I know he's always had his criticisms of how the co-star mode is not really engaging enough. It doesn't give you enough to do.
I'll be Johnny for
the
sake of
this
argument. Oh, go
for it. Be the hater. All right.
Co-star mode's terrible, and everyone involved with it should be fired.
Awesome. But yeah, like I actually thought it was pretty good, because I was prepared to basically not participate and just watch someone else play. Sometimes that can be fun. Like in this case, that's basically what you're doing, but you have this extra ability to help out. And, well, perhaps it depends also with who you're playing with. Because if I had been with, like, one of my friends who's a longtime gamer, like, I probably wouldn't have bothered. But in this case, I felt like I was actually being helpful, and I hope that my help was appreciated. I never thought to ask. But, you know, like, it was a good way to stay engaged in the game and to actually help someone who's not really used with the controls, with the camera and everything, to get around the game. One of the things that kind of shocked me, though, the first few levels in that game are actually, I don't know, like, I feel like the difficulty spikes really quickly. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you guys recall, but, like, the first two bosses are not too complicated. There's one that basically takes one hit, like, he's just a formality. He gives you your first star. And then the second one, you shoot back those, like, kind of a tennis match, you shoot back those round green balls at the giant octopus in the lava. But the third one, it's in that stage where you've got this giant tree, and you're going around the tree, and you have the bee costume, and you can't touch water, otherwise you lose the costume. And the enemy that you're fighting is this kind of beetle that you have to jump on top of and do a butt stump move. But it gets progressively harder, you know, like the beetle actually at some point flies higher, and you have, in addition to jumping on it and doing the move at the right time, you have to, like, basically go up this, this flower, like, that will propel you upward high enough so that you can actually reach the enemy. And once you hit it that second round, then it becomes angry and just becomes faster, but also, like, will try to throw you off its back. And that took a long time to defeat. Just having to deal with the camera angle was challenging enough, but all these extra steps that you had to do, and the fact that you couldn't touch the water, you had to keep the bee costume, and all of that added up, and I thought that perhaps, like, it was, like, quite difficult a little bit too early. And that's basically at that point that she kind of lost interest in the game. Like, she did manage to defeat it, but it took so long, and it was so frustrating to try to align yourself exactly with the boss. The game wasn't fun anymore at that point. But yeah, like, it was interesting to revisit that game, as, like, I can't imagine how hard it must be at Nintendo to actually, like, test these games and try to be, you know, like, to make them satisfying for everyone, because I recall finding that game as a whole a little bit too easy, except for a couple of stages. But then you have, like, all these complex maneuvers and these different things that you have to cope with. And, like, if it's your first time playing one of those games, like, it really is a lot to absorb at the same time. And they might have a little bit more trouble with that. And I don't know what the solution is for that, you know. Sure. And I think, like, I'm interested. I think I'm going to try to have her try out Super Mario 3D Land, because, you know, like, at least there you have a fixed camera.
Right.
And I think that's going to make a lot of difference.
And the jumping in that game is actually a little bit less complicated than it is in Galaxy 2.
Galaxies, there's so much shit going on, you know, especially once, you know, you're going upside down. I mean, for someone that's new to games, I think that's got to be really tricky.
Yeah.
But I think in defense of that game, As a hardcore Mario guy, especially the 3D stuff, like, I want the game to be hard. Like,
oh, me too.
You know, I don't want it to be, you know, don't want to be handheld. But, you know, I think that's a tricky thing for, you know, Nintendo obviously wants more, as many people as possible to buy those games. And they want to appeal to your girlfriend, but they also want to appeal to us that are the hardcore, you know, we want. You know, we will go for 120 stars or 240 or whatever. Like, we'll do all that stuff, so.
And I think the structure they've adopted for their 3D games, with the exception of 3D Land, in the basically collect, you only have to collect a relatively small subset of the shines or stars, whatever the hell they've called them, that particular game.
Right.
To achieve what is basically story success. They can essentially pepper in challenges that are challenging, and then leave just enough for people who don't want to be challenged like that to get through to the end. Mm-hmm. I think that's their mechanism for dealing with it, which means we end up with things like where you have to clean up trash, not because it's fun, but because it's relatively easy.
Yeah, I suppose so, but I can't exactly remember now if that boss was optional. I think since it's so early on, you kind of need all the stars that you can get. And I'm not sure if we could, like, it was optional if we could have skipped it. But it, yeah, it's interesting. Like, At the time, I didn't even think of it. Like, I didn't even think, like, oh, you know what? Let's try another stage.
Right. So. I mean, I played through those games kind of like fire. So I just sort of consumed all the stars I could and then went to the next stage. But really, I mean, I've watched people play them before. They get frustrated and they just move on to the next stage and find the next star. I mean, usually it's only you need about 3 to 4 per stage.
Right.
To be able to get to the next one comfortably.
All right, now I feel like an idiot. I completely forgot about the limited number of stars that. But although, like you know, like I finished like the I ended up playing against like the end boss of that particular galaxy, or what are they called, like the whatever like observatory that I was in, like to access these different galaxies. And from there, I unlocked the next observatory. So I'm really not sure. I could have skipped anything in that first galaxy.
And that's possible. I mean, you may have had to burn through probably 4 or 5 in the first galaxy to really get there.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, what did you think of the experiences playing as the co-star, though? Like, how was it for you? Did you feel like you were like you were accomplishing anything, or did you feel more like when you're helping someone learn to ride a bike where you don't feel like you're really getting anywhere, but they're getting there?
I do think it was helpful, especially the pointer, because... Yeah, like when the direction changes so much, you know, you want to be able to quickly show exactly to the other person
right.
where she's supposed to go. So that was perfect for that.
So I actually don't have a whole lot to talk about this week. I was going to talk about the fact that I have revived Steam on this computer when I realized, oh, wait, even though this computer has a low clock speed, it's got 4 cores in it, so I can actually run all my Steam games. But
nice.
I decided instead of doing that, I'll talk about something else instead. As you may be aware, the Mid-Atlantic got pounded by storms for the last few days, or for the last week or so, and we ended up losing power. Pretty much everybody I know lost power, except for me because I live in a place that's a brick bunker, essentially. But my parents lost power, so I was over there helping them with stuff, and at some point I went over there and found that my sister had gotten my old Game Boy out of my what was my bedroom. And whatever game she could just find lying about with it. And most of the games she picked up were relatively inconsequential titles. But there was one she picked up that I actually have sort of a checkered history with. And that game was the Game Boy version of Kid Dracula, which is the only version that came out in the U.S. There's an NES version, or a Famicom version, that's kind of a... The Game Boy version is kind of a remake and also a sequel to it. It's weird. Like, the first two levels are the same, and then the whole game's different.
Are you telling me that the Ku Klux Klan member is actually in the Game Boy game?
Yes, he is.
Wow. I am guessing, though, that it was censored for North America.
They're ghosts.
Okay.
Yeah, they don't have the markings on top of their hats.
Phew.
It's a very... So, for those of you who know nothing about this game, which should be all of you, this game is a self-parody of the Castlevania games from the NES era, as produced by Konami. Now, in this entirely non-canon adventure, Kid Dracula is actually the son of Dracula from the previous Castlevania title.
So are you playing Alucard, or... Is it one of those, like, Bowser Jr.?
Yeah, it's a Bowser Jr. situation. This is unnamed son of Dracula.
Awesome.
Also named Dracula. But basically it's this weird cartoony version of sort of the pre-Metroidvania style Castlevania games. So there's lots of platforming, lots of shooting things, but not much in the way of puzzle solving. One thing that the game does have, though, is the ability to turn into a bat, which is awesome, and fly for about 5 seconds. Now, I had this game as a kid because, as I've talked about on the show, my parents bought me some of the worst NES games that came out. Period. Like, if you watch any, like, top 10 list of worst NES games, I probably had 5 of them. It's amazing. But on the Game Boy, they took an entire other stroke to make me hate gaming, which is if you have a top 10 hardest Game Boy games, I probably have all of them. And this game is actually surprisingly difficult. So I used to play this on every road trip. I would get to World 3, run out of lives, game over, back to the start. And it would be the same cycle over and over again, and I do not remember what World 4 looked like. I made it once. It still wouldn't have really meant that much to me, except that I had just recently watched the Game Center CX on the NES version of this game, or the Famicom version, to be more technical. And it brought back a lot of memories. So just seeing the game sitting out there in a pile of maybe 4 Game Boy games that she had pulled out of the 100 I had, it seemed like a pretty interesting coincidence. So I decided, heck, I'll just sit down and play it. So I'm sitting in my parents' living room, totally disregarding every conversation going around on me, and remembering, this game doesn't explain a damn thing to you. So I spent the entire first level trying to clear this jump before I remembered, oh yeah, I can turn into a bat. And then trying to figure out how to shoot these things above me and realizing, oh yeah, I can shoot up as opposed to shooting straight out.
It's kind of par for the course, though. Like, they expected you to actually read the manual back in the day.
It's a funny thing, though, because you don't have to read the manual anymore. But then I realized that, yeah, back then I probably should have read the manual. I probably would have made it past level 3 at some point if I had read the manual. But, so I played it for the first 3 stages. And as memories came back, I remembered how to game the system and basically get infinite lives and just sort of move through the game. And I actually really enjoyed that particular game, which made me wonder, like, why aren't there more games that are actually kind of these self-referential parody games? Because part of that game's charm is just how absurdist it is. I mean, like Guillaume said, there's a boss at the very beginning. The very first boss is in your house, for one. So he's in Dracula's mansion that you've apparently taken over because I guess he's dead at this point. Dead, re-dead. Totally awesome dead this time. And it's basically a, quote, ghost that looks more like a Klansman who comes running at you and then jumps over your head. And you just have to shoot him until he rolls away crying for only a bigger one to come out who does the same thing. For an old one to come out who you can't hurt until he gets winded and passes out, and then it gets dragged off by the previous two. It's a totally bizarre, crazy game that makes no sense whatsoever, and it's phenomenal. I just really enjoyed it. I'm hopeful that this game will get ported onto the Virtual Console, but I know it won't because that will be
too
good.
Why do you think it won't? I mean, I think that
it's such a niche title, though. I mean, I can't imagine.
Look, they're porting Castlevania: The Adventure. I think that Europe got it this week.
Yeah, but that's at least got the Castlevania name in it.
Yeah, sure. But like, if they manage, yeah, I don't know. Yeah, you might have a point. But if they try to leverage the Castlevania connection,
yeah,
I think they would. Who knows? Nintendo releases the weirdest shit ever in Virtual Console. They have unlimited amounts of stuff. You know, they're like, okay, let's try this week. I mean, does that hurt? They, you know, who knows how long it takes to actually port that stuff, and as far as what they could actually make on that, I mean,
I think there's a chance like that because I think Nintendo really took a long time to figure out how to do the whole virtual shop thing. Yeah, I remember when Pulseman came out, like you only had a generic press release about it, and like I don't remember like any particular mention of Pokemon in the press release. Mm-hmm. I think it would have been very, very smart to plaster the name Pokemon in bold letters all
the
over.
People who brought you Pokemon.
Absolutely, like that's how you sell a game. Like you can't really count on people have fond memories of Pulseman because like they don't exist.
Do you like Pokemon? Well, you better buy this game then, because we're going to kill them all if you don't.
But yeah, like so I think that with this Summer of 8-Bit thing, Nintendo, you know, like is finally learning and they're showing that they've learned something. And I don't think it's out of the question that we might get like Castlevania the Adventure and Kid Dracula and other games like that for like Halloween for a special event, you know?
It is a tremendous, tremendously weird game. I actually really enjoyed going back and watching the game set there on it, because it's actually, it looks so nice and easy, and then just brutal, unfair, terrible things start happening to you. And you're like, yep, this is a Castlevania game. Thanks a lot, Konami. You're the best. Never change. And as somebody who actually prefers the old style Castlevania to the Castleroids style, which I know that's kind of a minority opinion, to me, that I'm quite happy with it. So I'll probably next time I'm over there, just get all my Game Boy games and just hammer through them. But once I finish this one, I'll probably be done for the Game Boy for a while because I forgot how incredibly hard it is to see.
Well, especially since you were in a blackout, right?
Well, they had power at this point.
Okay.
This was just, I'm not going over, they don't have power. Good Lord. I'd have to talk to them then. Jeez. But yeah, I mean, for me, that's pretty much it. I'll probably hammer on that game a little bit more, but I've got other stuff to get through, so I think that's it for me, and I think that's it for new business. We'll be back right after the break with listener mail. Welcome back. Now it's time for listener mail. Billy has the first letter.
All right. Ryan T. wrote, I was recently reading about current-gen game development costs and that over 100 development studios have shut down since 2006. Companies are finding it increasingly difficult to create games even by current standards. If development costs rise even higher in this next generation, will we see developers underutilize next-gen hardware simply because they can't afford the extra costs associated? I feel that only the biggest companies' bankrolls will be able to push some of these consoles to their limits, predominantly for Sony and Microsoft. Now that Nintendo has gone HD with Wii U, how will rising development costs affect their games? I can't see Nintendo spending $100 million on a single game, even if it's the most epic Zelda ever created. It doesn't seem to fit their philosophy. Do you think we could see more third-party support from developers who don't want to gamble with so much money across two consoles and decide Wii U is worthy of multi-platform inclusion? What are your personal thoughts about developers creating games that must sell 2 to 3 million copies at full retail price to break even on the initial game investment?
Well, I think Zelda's epic yarn would be tremendous, so... But I don't think it's going to cost $100 million to make.
No, but I do think, you know, those are the games that, I mean, obviously, whatever the follow-up to Galaxy is and whatever the Zelda that is, you know, the HD version of, mm-hmm. you know, their next epic game, you know, it is going to take a couple hundred people to make those games.
Yep.
You know, and first party-wise. You know, I think there's a couple things that this guy, that Ryan mentions, there's over 100 development studios that have shut down since 2006. It's not just because that it moved over to next gen. You know, there's a lot of developers that took a gamble on certain things and it failed. That probably is what killed them.
Right. They just didn't make good games. I mean, there are development studios that go down because they make crap.
Yeah, and that I think is, you know, I do know that the jump to HD that this console gen was for 360 and PlayStation 3 really did take a toll on a lot of companies. You know, creating those HD assets is a very enormous undertaking. That's why development time took a lot longer. We saw so many up-res ports in the beginning of the cycle, a lot of sports games with very few features in them. It was like everything started over. I don't think we're going to see that this time around because we've had a really long cycle in HD. So as far as do I think third parties are going to be attracted to Wii U? I don't know. I mean, so far we don't really know too much. I mean, I think after Wii and GameCube, I think third parties are very, very hesitant to bring something over, especially when you have to basically have a separate development team from your whatever the Xbox or PS3 game is.
Right.
Because it's such a radically different control scheme. And you know, if you really want to take into effect the Wii U pad, and to utilize that effectively, yeah, you're going to have to add additional development costs.
Right.
That's just going to happen. So, you know, I'm really curious why EA has been so quiet. We haven't seen, and that's one of the biggest. Activision, same thing, also very quiet on the Wii front. Ubisoft always hits Nintendo launches hard. They had, what, 40... 3DS launch games or something like that? Like
maybe a few less than that, but not too many.
Okay, I'm a little far-fetched.
But they have 12 Wii launch games. I mean, something, you know, completely insane like that.
And it's obvious from this year's E3 that Ubisoft is a huge partner
Right.
With you know, they're going to be there in full force at launch, and great, and hopefully some of those games will actually be all right, you know. But they are dedicating a good chunk. I mean, they were there when the Wii launched. I mean, Rabbids was, that was a really good game at the Wii launch, you know.
That was and a thing, as it were.
It was fun. It was, you know, it was nice, especially since Red Steel was a piece of crap. So,
God,
do I see third parties jumping on the Wii U bandwagon because it's going to be a little cheaper? I don't know. I think we're going to see a lot of ports.
Yeah, and like those ports, like, don't they become kind of like a smaller and smaller portion, like, of like the overall budget, like the bigger the game gets? Because like if you have like 300 people working on Assassin's Creed, and you've got like the Shanghai studio working on these types of levels, and you've got like the Montreal studio working on the overworld, and you've got the Toronto studio like doing something else, it doesn't it become like less of a deal to have like the Quebec City studio just working on a Wii U port? You know, like as the project becomes bigger and bigger and more bloated.
Yeah, Assassins is, I mean, that falls into the category of, like, Call of Duty, where it's, right, like, all hands on deck to get this beast out the door.
Yeah, I mean, the budget for those games is effectively unlimited. Right. I mean, there's no ceiling to what they were willing to spend to make an Assassin's Creed game.
I mean, think there is a ceiling. Let's be realistic here. It's
there's a ceiling, but it is quite high.
They're not going to spend all of France's money on this game. So
that would be an epic turn for the EU situation, though.
But I mean, I think, you know, what he's been discussing, I think that's why we've seen a lot of developers going, okay, well, if this is how things are going to go, and maybe they got burned on making a, you know, $10, $15, $20 million game. That's why they've, okay, fine, we'll start a different studio. We'll make indie games, make something even smaller, more bite-sized, or something for XBLA or PSN or iOS. You know, we're seeing a lot of that now, too. I hope, for the Wii U's sake, that we do see studios decide to focus their resources on Wii U. But so far, at launch, I think third parties are very hesitant, and it seems very obvious, especially from what we saw at E3, that they're kind of taking a wait and see approach. But that's just me.
Sure. Now, getting to the $100 million game, have we crossed that threshold with the game yet? I mean, I know Activision spent more on promotion for one of the Call of Duty games they did producing it, and that may have pushed it over that threshold. But have we actually had games hit that mark in their development cost? I mean, The Star Wars game that's obviously a next-gen game that we saw at E3, I mean, that game looks like it is going to be boatloads of expensive.
But I don't know. I really don't know. We don't know anything about PS4, 720, whatever the hell they're going to be called, Durango.
2 to 3 million copies, though, for a game, I mean, for a big, huge AAA title, that's kind of what the going line is, I would imagine. I mean, I don't think that the 2 million for really expensive titles is that far off, but I think right now, if the question is, are we going to see more developers underutilizing the hardware, we see that with a lot of games. I mean, it's not necessarily a bad thing, because sometimes it's a creative decision that, you know, I don't need to have a hyper-detailed art style. I mean, you could look at
Borderlands?
To an extent, yeah. Borderlands is probably, I mean, they don't have to spend a whole lot of time making hundreds and hundreds of textures. But, yep. I mean, it's not necessarily just to cheap out. I mean, you can make a game that's equally attractive without it being a total budget blaster.
Well, that's also resource management, too. I mean, you're talking about an open world multiplayer, you know, sort of an MMO game.
Yeah, I mean, that's a special case for that
game. To get that to run on that, you know, 360 or PS3, I mean, it's a lot different than when you have a top of the line PC that can just, you know, just destroy those games. But
sure,
you know, open world games, they have to make things a little more, you know, they have to tone down the detail a little bit just to get it to run. And I think next gen is actually going to help those sorts of games. You're gonna be able to have a lot more detail in those environments, and you're gonna have a lot more, you know, whatever the next gen Grand Theft Auto game is, you know, you're going to be able to have just tons of people in the environment. You're going to have a lot more cars and better detail. I think that's where next gen is really, really going to take off, because they're going to have more memory, more storage capacity. But I also think what really is going to be a big deal for next gen is the services and online interactivity between, like, we're already seeing it on Microsoft side, mm-hmm. where you're going to be able to start a game on your Xbox and then bring it over to your Windows phone or your Win 8 tablet, or, you know, that's the kind of thing where you're going to have side things, or like when they showed Sleeping Dogs, for example, where you can, they showed this behind closed doors. They didn't show it at the Ubisoft press conference, but, you know, you're going to be able to, like, say you're somewhere in the game world doing a mission, and on my iPad, say I'm at work, you know, not working, and I have my iPad, I could, you know, either help you or hinder you in your mission. I think that's going to be more of the, outside of the graphical, you know, updates that we're going to see with these systems, I think it's going to be more service tied, more, you know, cross-platform connectivity sorts of things. I think we're going to see a lot more of that.
Are we really interested in that, though, as gamers? I am not sure I am. I'm not sure I want to connect to Facebook. Already it's a chore to connect to Facebook and have all sorts of invitations to help out people in their games. And I don't know, like, if I'm also solicited on my phone and through Twitter and through everything, like, it would be very easy to... I hope there's an easy way to turn that off and to tune it out. And if they make it easy to do that, then, like, have they gained really anything? How much do these social platforms actually help these games?
I think they help them, but I think kind of what the route that I would like to see them go is kind of what Sony's doing right now between the PS3 and Vita, where there's...
Transferring.
Well, it's basically connectivity, but you can play the same game on both systems. So you say you're playing MLB The Show and you're playing a season of baseball, you can transfer that over to your Vita and take that same, you know, experience with you and continue that play on the road. That's the kind of stuff that I'd really like to see. I mentioned it when we were talking about the two different new Super Mario Brothers games that are coming out. Why aren't they connected somehow? Why wouldn't you just have one game that...
Right.
Say you want to go on the go, and granted, I understand there's going to be different things with touchscreen stuff, but ultimately, you know, you could do the touch platforming stuff if you're multiplayer. You know, it just, that's kind of the way I would like to see it. Or, you know, say I'm playing Need for Speed or something like that, and be able to do something on my PC where I'm doing all the car detailing on my PC or iPad, and then when I get back home and I'm playing the full console experience, I get that stuff is already there waiting for me. Or even better, you know, being able to say, oh, I want, you say you're at work and a new game comes out that you want, and you could, you know, from your PC at work, your smartphone, you could say, start downloading. By the time I get home, those 4 gigs or whatever are already installed and ready to rip.
And you can already do that on the Xbox. I mean, you can fire that thing up.
And didn't Nintendo say that they wanted to do that as well?
Like I believe
yeah,
they did,
and I
yeah.
I think we're gonna see more of that. But I think that's, you know, we're doing pretty good at HD. I don't see the next gen consoles. Hopefully, we're gonna see games that are actually 1080p. You know, we still haven't seen many 1080p games now. We're still seeing 720. Mm-hmm. Maybe we'll get that, you know, or if I don't even know if they're going to be future-proofing that stuff for the 4K stuff. That's going to be later down the road, but we don't even know if that's going to even matter. So I think if developers will either go smaller or, you know, there's going to be those cases where you're going to have those key franchises like the Call of Duties where they're going to throw 15 development teams at it to get the game done on a yearly basis. Those are going to be the big budget, but those games make, you know, just ridiculous amounts of money. I just think now developers have learned a lot about this gen, and they're going to be a little smarter, hopefully, moving forward.
And what about Nintendo? Like the because part of the question is that he's wondering how Nintendo is going to cope with this.
Yeah, I mean, of the development studios out there, they're really the only ones who are... They're probably the least prepared for next generation because they haven't been making games in HD. But
well, I think we're seeing that with their partnerships. You know,
that's true.
They're working with Namco for for Smash Brothers. You know, I think they're gonna lean on partners that way, whether that's good or bad. I mean, you know, it's helped and hindered them. I mean, you know, a third party F-Zero was really awesome on the GameCube, but a third party Star Fox was a heaping pile of shit. You know?
By the way, everyone listening knew exactly where that was going.
So, I mean, it depends. It depends on how it all comes together. So,
That goes for the talent. But what about the budget? Like, Nintendo would still be the one footing the bill, no? And
Nintendo themselves are a relatively frugal company.
I don't think that Nintendo was even going to try to compete with these multi-million dollar projects, like multi-team and whatever, because like they still had, like, we're in 2012 and they still had no problem not putting any voice acting in their Zelda game. Like, they don't seem really to think it's really that important. Like, if they can cut costs somewhere, they will. And I guess given the way that Skyward Sword has sold, I don't expect the budget to increase for the next one either. Not by very much.
I mean, I think to an extent it'll have to, just because it needs to build the extra textures. But
right.
After adding voice acting in Super Mario Sunshine, I'm a little wary about adding any voice characters
Zelda.
That was one game, though. If you've played Kid Icarus Uprising, it's pretty damn solid.
Really?
Isn't it?
They talk a lot. They never shut the hell up.
Sure, but also, like, the flow of the conversation, like, is really good. Like, it's not one of those stilted, like, hey, over here, hey, come on, throw a grenade.
That's true. I mean, you know, Nintendo's always used the excuse that, oh, you know, we want you to be the voice of Link and all that horse shit. But, you know, I expect, now that we're in HD, because I would love for them just to go nuts and really give people the Zelda that they really wanted in HD. Let's see this shit.
Yeah, I mean, if you saw the Zelda demo from last year,
yeah,
I mean, it was really pretty. I mean, obviously it was still rough around the edges, and obviously it wasn't a game. It was a pre-scripted series of motions that was being rendered in real time.
No, but when you have Skyward Sword sitting right next to it, which is how my demo was.
Was it really? Oh,
it
man.
Was really, yeah, my upstairs area had two Wii U's next to each other and then a Wii next to it with Skyward Sword running on it. And it was just like, man, really? Like, that's harsh. And Skyward Sword, to its credit, is actually a very, very beautiful game in certain parts.
Right.
But, yes, we all have HD TVs now. Let's bring it. Let's see this art really done well, you know. And that's why they chose that art style for Skyward Sword, because it's not in HD, so they got to do something.
All right, the impressionist look kind of works well with blurring things.
Yeah,
and so does SD video going up to an HD set. But I mean, you could still do that art style in HD and it look even better.
Sure,
you can look at the up-resed videos of like Wind Waker and just sit there and go, wait, that was a GameCube game.
Yeah, really? Seriously, Wind Waker, who does not want an HD port of that? Yeah. I'd play the shit out of that game. Like, I would be so excited for that. And full widescreen, and like, yeah, I want that. And I complain a lot about Nintendo rehashing their titles over and over and over again. But like,
but you bought three versions of Fence vs. Zombies, so.
I only bought two. Hey, I was there on day one for Ocarina of Time when that came out for 3DS, like, and I marathoned it, like, I had so much fun, but I hadn't played that game for a really long time, and we're talking about one of the greatest Zeldas ever, you know,
sure.
So.
But just as I'm not really fond of buying several ports, I'm not looking forward to a future where Nintendo just re-releases GameCube games in HD. Like, I'm not...
No,
I don't know. It's not really that exciting. And I don't think... Like, I'm sure that they're going to do it. Like, Sony especially is, like, really heavy on the HD remakes. But it's not what's going to convince me to buy a Wii U, certainly.
No.
But that's what they're doing on the 3DS. I mean, and they did that with the GBA. You know what I mean?
Sure.
Yeah, and I didn't buy those games. Like, I mean,
Nintendo might decide to not do HD remakes, but just do HD up ports, where they just quadruple the resolution and call it a day. And, like, do nothing and maybe make, put it in widescreen and then just put it up on download services.
If they do that, that would be awesome. I would be all about that.
But, I mean, it'll, it's, you know, we can't really speculate too much. Although we've gone pretty far afield of this question at this point.
That's true.
So why don't we move on to the next question? Guillaume.
Sure. Nay First wrote, "Hello, RFN. I found your podcast from the NeoGAF forum several months ago, and have been catching up on old episodes to help me build a quality Wii library, while the games are still readily available at great prices and enjoy a Nintendo-centric games discussion. My questions? With the announcement of Mighty Switch Force HD, I started thinking about Nintendo's own plans for first-party downloadable releases on the Wii U. Do you think it possible or probable that EAD-developed games might be released downloadable only? Remember Miyamoto's stated desire to work with a smaller team and smaller budget. Could a AAA smaller game be on the horizon? Maybe this could be the way to introduce a new IP without committing a huge amount of resources and time. Please keep up the great work. This has quickly become my favorite podcast of all time."
That is high praise. Thank you very, very much. So, I mean, Nintendo's internal studios will make games for the Wii U service. I mean, they're already doing it for the eShop. I think they've released like 5 or 6 games for the eShop at this point that came from internal houses. Intelligent Systems did Pushmo. Trying to remember who did the Samurai game. But I don't think we've seen one from EAD yet. However, EAD did do some DSiWare stuff, if I recall correctly. So I think it's just really a matter of time in that case. Now, in terms of it being AAA, smaller budget, which is a bit of a
contradiction.
Yeah, but I mean, like, high profile is how I'm more reading it. I mean, they could be doing some stuff in there that's actually, you know, a more interesting stuff for them to do. I mean, keep in mind that EAD is a large group. There's multiple teams within the EAD, but if you're talking about EAD Tokyo, I would imagine they're busy making, because they're more or less like they're busy making Mario whatever. They're either making a Mario Wii U game or a Mario 3DS game that's in 3D. It doesn't really matter which one, but they're making something at this point. But I mean, yeah, there will be something from an internal Nintendo team that's of relatively large repute. I don't know that they would put Miyamoto on it. I mean, he's on a lot of, quote, on a lot of games. But, you know, his actual involvement, I would imagine it's probably closer to what they talked about during the investors Q&A, which is where they're working on getting people in the, quote, younger generation geared up to take over those leadership roles. That would be the kind of place where you would put someone who maybe this is their first game they're going to direct or their first time they're executing their own idea for a game.
Let's be honest, the last game Miyamoto made was Ocarina of Time.
Yeah, I mean, he's quote, on games, but that just means he's being shuttled back and forth between development studios.
Yeah, he was the face of Super Mario Sunshine until that game tanked, and then it was some other dude.
Under the bus.
Yeah, they threw us like, yeah, what was this dude?
Yeah.
And it was really? Okay. I mean, I agree with you. I think we'll see, but I think we'll see smaller games. I think the Pushmo is a great example. I think that the smaller XBLA, PSN, smaller stuff, AAA games, no, retail's going to want a chunk of that. They're going to have to, you know, I don't think it would be download only. And even if they did start with a download, I'd bet it would still come at some point in a retail package. Not everybody in the world has the internets. So especially, high speed internet to actually download a lot of this stuff. Plus, we don't even know what the storage situation is going to be for this new console anyway. So
there will be storage. That's all we know at this point. Yeah, I mean, like I said, EAD did release DSiWare stuff, although they didn't really try that. I mean, their most gamey game was Paper Plane. But I mean, like I said, there's a lot of that there. I would be curious, you know, what the long-term vision for Nintendo's in-house stuff for Wii U is, because they didn't do a lot on the WiiWare service. They did some. They had Through Space, which was probably their most recent one, and that was probably a year ago. But they mostly left that to the devices of the third-party developers. And I think on the eShop, they've been much more actively involved. So I would expect early on we'll probably see, you know, 1 or 2 games from them that are right in the front. And, you know, the WarioWare game, or not WarioWare game, Game & Wario. Yeah, amongst the games that EAD put out for DSiWare are basically every freaking Game & Watch game that came out. I wouldn't be surprised at all if Game & Wario was a downloadable title for there. I mean,
it should be. That should not be a $60 title.
Not unless there's a lot more to it than what we've seen, but they basically told us what's in it, so there isn't. I mean, that would be a good way to, A, get the service some coverage, because it is, there is a certain amount of built-in audience for a WarioWare-style game. And there's, certainly there's some name there, and also it would keep it from being brand confusion with Nintendo Land.
Mm-hmm.
It fits all your needs. Just do it.
I think that pretty much like anything with Mario in the title is going to come on disc. Like, they know that they can sell that stuff on, you know, at retail. And they even went and got like a ROM and, you know, sold it to people.
Kirby is doing it again, so.
Although that collection is a little bit more complete.
Yeah, it is.
They did have like a Mario and Donkey Kong game on the DS. But then like later on, they came up with an update and that was retail. So they really, I don't know if we'll see like, you know, a AAA franchise from Nintendo as a downloadable. Like Mario, I think you can count him out. But as far as original new IPs go, I think that, am I imagining this, or like did they say something about not repeating situations like Steel Diver as a retail game on 3DS?
Yeah.
I think I heard them saying that, They in the future, like, that kind of project would probably be downloadable.
Right. And it should have been, because it was DSi tech demo. I mean, it's DS tech demo.
Yeah, but they said that their major games, or that Wii U games, will be able to be downloaded as well as being purchased. Yeah.
So to an extent, it may... The only real difference for them is they get a wider cut of the profit margin. So to an extent, there's some impetus for them to do it, but... You know, there's obviously retail chain politics involved and moving units.
Sure. But like for those titles that they don't see having, you know, very much legs at retail, do we think that the fact that they are going to be selling retail games digitally, do we think that they think that that's going to help give enough visibility to their store to actually perhaps like put out more of these weird experimental games? Because, like, you know, like they probably will increase visibility of their eShop that way. And then, like, in turn, that probably will increase sales of those smaller games that sell for cheaper.
You know, I'd be more interested in how they push or how they brand the retail games on the service relative to the non-retail games, the download-only titles. If they brand them consistently as a singular entity and they're just priced differently, then I think that's more of a statement that to them, the retail channel is just what it is, and everything you buy on the download service is something else. And I think that would give them more flexibility to decide what games to put out, you know, how they want to release them, what level they want to push them. If they brand them as something separate, like you do right now on the Xbox service, where there's arcade games, there's indie games, there's... I can't remember what they call them, but they're just regular old 360 games you can download. They're kind of all in one place, but they're branded separately. It can be a little bit more confusing. But for them to really get something out of making it downloadable only, in-house developed game that has, you know, is of the tier of things like Mighty Switch Force, which are undeniably very high-end games. I mean, they're very well thought out, very lovingly executed games that were built for that platform because it's a cheaper way to get your game to market than the retail space. I don't think there are people who believe that the Shantae DSiWare game couldn't have been a DS game, like a DS cartridge game. Mm-hmm. But there, it was just a cost situation where it made more sense economically for them to put it out on that platform. I think as the platform holder, Nintendo probably has to show more confidence in their platform's ability to sell software, including disked software, for the third party publishers. It's just as a show of we can do this, but there will be something. There will be stuff out there that they are putting out to get that service again as a show of confidence. I mean, they've slowed down on the eShop stuff now that other developers are getting their stuff on the service. But that first few weeks was Nintendo, 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 Nintendo. They put out the Through Space sequel a few weeks ago, but I mean, beyond that, it's been pretty quiet from them.
Yeah, I suppose so. There's also the fact that retailers are going to be able to sell you a pushmo code.
God, that's a convoluted system.
I know, but like essentially now everything is a retail game. if you look at it that way.
Yeah, I guess. But you have to have internet access, so.
Yeah, I don't know how those games would actually get visibility in the store. Like, would people just have, like, a catalog that they can flip through?
So they already have Pushmo cards. They've had them for a while. They're just cards that hang on the wall, and you punch them in your code. And it's like when we get review copies, we just get a code, and we just punch it into the 3DS menu, and it just says, all right, here's your game, downloading it. They've basically already done that. Now this just... They just announced they're going to do it, even though they were already doing it. It's such a freaking weird thing. I don't know. I don't know, Billy. What do you have any thoughts of what they might do as these kinds of, maybe not higher end, is probably the word I'm looking for, higher end download games, even if it's just for visibility purposes or for some other objective?
No, I think they're going to do smaller experiences. They're more weird experimental stuff, kind of like those. I don't think they even came here. But, well, actually, no, I think they were in the DSi shop, but, like, those smaller weird GBA titles that they released in Japan that were...
Art style?
The art series, yeah, those, you know, like, I think we're going to see that kind of stuff, because you can test the waters and stuff, and it's an easier way to just, you know, distribute that stuff than having more crap. And, I mean, and I think the only other... As far as like huge AAA games, no, I think we'll see it. You'll be able to buy the next Mario game on. You could download it or you could pick it up in the store. I think we will see it both ways. Just like you're seeing Sony right now with Vita, and I'm cool with that. I do not own any physical copies of games for my Vita. I just bought a huge memory stick and I download everything, and it's great because I have it everywhere with me. I think that's fantastic. And I think they also announced that new Super Mario Brothers 2 can be downloadable.
It is the first downloadable 3DS game from Nintendo. Yes.
Yeah, I mean, so I think they're going to test the waters a little bit, but retail is here to stay. That is for sure, at least for the short time.
All right, so we're gonna limit to three letters this week. So I've got our final letter, and Ellen wrote, "Hi fellas, as a soon-to-be poor student living a ridiculous distance from home, I've had to reassess a lot of what I do, my gaming habits among them. A console won't be convenient where I'm going to live, so I'm going to have to switch to handheld games, which I play most of anyway. I do still play my DS Lite, though it's coming to the end of its lifespan for me. I was considering getting a PSP, as Vita is too expensive and lacks appeal, because they have games that are now relatively cheap, and there's a lot of great-sounding RPGs and such, like that I have never played on the system. But the eShop and Virtual Console on 3DS sound like they'd be even better for budget gaming. My question is this. I thrive on RPGs and adventure games. And I'll be honest, one of the reasons the 3DS really, really appeals to me right now is I'm yearning for another 999 fix. Do you think that the 3DS will be well supported in this regard? And is it any better than the PSP in terms of gaming on a budget? Bear in mind that this will be replacing a console, and I'm looking for a lot of bang for my buck game-wise. Downloadable games mean nothing to me if they're basically what you'd find commonly on smartphones. What I want is a good, solid, lengthy, and or story-heavy kind of game." So, just to really quickly discuss the 999 issue, I believe the sequel to that is both Vita and 3DS, so...
Right, but Ellen is not really looking for a Vita.
Yeah, that's true. So, I was just putting it out there, just to be clear, so somebody's like, well, you know, it's on both. But nobody listens to the show is likely to be that guy anyway.
Hmm.
So I know that in terms of DS game or 3DS RPGs, there's a handful that are out now. There's none that I'm really super high on. There's a lot of stuff that Level 5 has committed to in terms of producing for the 3DS, but a lot of it's also, again, on Vita. But in terms of the RPG scene on either system, I'm not real educated on the DS. I know... XSEED published a lot. I mean, in the PSP, I know XSEED published a lot of PSP RPGs, but they're really, really nichey. I mean, like Yeast 1 and 2. I mean, stuff that the average person really isn't likely to be super high on.
Right. But it sounds like Ellen is really like the type of gamer that would actually appreciate these games.
Yeah, that's where I was going. It sounds like this is a situation where that might actually not be such a bad situation, because this is the target market. I mean, it sounds like Ellen is the target market for these games.
Right. I don't want to be like I don't especially like steering someone away from the 3DS. Like, I think ideally Ellen should get both. But if specifically RPGs are your thing, the PSP is incredible. And personally, I own a PSP Go, so like all of my games are downloadable. Like, you might think that you're not really getting good deals because you can't really get anything that's on UMDs. So, but actually, the PSN store has been incredible in terms of offering sales, like more than you would expect from, like, you would expect Sony to try to milk the users who can't really go elsewhere. But there have been several publisher-themed sales over the years, actually. And when Atlus has one of its sales, you can get incredible deals. And actually, like, as it turns out, right now in July, Atlus has a sale. And many of its games are 50% off. And that means that you can have, like, some of the Persona games that are on PSP for $10. And those games can be, like, 80 hours long. Like, they can be as long as you want them to be, but, you know, like, you're looking at a good, like, 60 to 100 hours of playtime.
My advice here, even though I don't own a PSP, is actually, if you have a DSi, or a DS Lite, so you, I would keep it with you, because there are still DS RPGs that you haven't played. I mean, I published a list of 16 I played, and I haven't played a ton of the big ones, simply because I buy nicheier stuff. I'm planning on doing this myself at some point. Buy a PSP, lowball it, go for like a PSP, whatever that the last non-Go model was.
3,000, I think.
Yeah. Buy that, just hit the download service hard.
Why do the download service? I mean,
if you can find these games used, yeah. I mean, go for it.
I think you can pick up a lot of UMD games super cheap. Then you're also dealing with, but then, and that's the tricky part. You know, PSP Go, I just never thought it was a good idea, but I also have a huge PSP library on UMD.
So this person is not starting with the UMD collection. And right. Like, I don't think that Exceed or Atlus titles are actually that easy to find for cheap at retail. Are they?
They don't tend to make that many, no.
Yeah, like they tend to be more limited in quantity.
Well, no, but we're talking about used at this point, so
sure,
they're going to be paying cheaper. Then you've got all the, you know, Final Fantasies. I mean, there's the Vita or the PSP has. I totally agree with you. Has a ton of RPGs that hit that system. However, I would still opt to be future-proofing myself and getting a Vita. You can still use those. You can still download those games and they play on the Vita, right? So then you have a bigger screen. Then you have two sticks. Then say there's an RPG that comes out for the Vita. Then you have that all in its huge HD crazy OLED glory, you know?
And right.
Then you have the best of both worlds. Granted, I understand that console is probably $100, $150 more, but then you're also kind of future-proofing yourself. So at least you have the latest hardware.
Right. I guess that the future-proofing part is also kind of the reasoning why I'm talking about PSN first, because anything that you're going to buy on there, you're actually going to be able to take to your Vita if eventually you get one. So that's why I would perhaps like stay away from UMDs.
My thought on the matter actually was to go with the PSP now and just get ready for the inevitable price drop / glut of used 3DSs that hit the market when the 3DS XL comes out.
Yeah.
First off, the XL and the regular 3DS are priced way too close together. I think we said last week it's $20.
Mm-hmm.
And people are there's going to be a significant number of people upgrading their systems. If a price drop and a flood of used units comes in, you'll be able to get a 3DS on the cheap. It won't be new, but still, it'll be commensurate probably with the price of a new PSP.
I do think, though, you know, the one thing that we don't know exactly, you know, which titles that he's looking for, which kind of RPGs, which, if they're not, you know,
right.
Go look at the list of games that you want in whichever platform it's available for, go for it. If it's on the 3DS, you know, if it's on the Nintendo side, then you have a decision to make.
And, yeah.
You know, I do expect a Vita price drop before the end of the year. They have to.
They do.
But just, given the mention of 999, I'm guessing that anime-ish types of RPGs are perfectly fine with Ellen. So, there's no reason why...
There is a glut of those on the PSP.
Yeah. Like, anything by Atlus. And if you've never played the Persona games,
Atlus,
I've only... Atlus, yeah.
Atlus, Exceed, Axis Games. Just one other one I'm missing. But yeah.
I've only played Persona 4, but I really, really enjoyed it. And you're going to have like a remake of that on the Vita. But right now there's also a remake of Persona 3 on the PSP. And yeah, like you've got tons of discoveries to make on that system.
Did Square Enix ever finish moving all their PSP games to the download service?
You don't have the Kingdom Hearts game. That's the only one that I know for sure is missing.
Okay, I know for a little while, the remake of Final Fantasy Tactics wasn't there for some unknown reason.
I'm pretty sure it is. Now it is there, and you've also got like the Final Fantasy IV remake and the like the 1 and 2 remakes as well.
Square likes to port their stuff to everything. Let's just
That's true. Yeah, because it was weird. It's like a week after the Go came out, and like, we're not releasing that on the download service. Mm-hmm. F you guys. Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of stuff on the Vita download library. I mean, on the PSP download library, which is the Vita download library at this point, that is out there. Like I said, right now, the 3DS RPG pickings are not great. There is, just historically speaking, there's reason to assume that it will get better.
Mm-hmm.
Atlas is heavily invested in the system already. They've already published 2 games for it, which in Atlas terms is like volcanic eruption for a year and a half to put out 2 games. But in terms of stuff that's come out, there's not much. I mean, there's the Tails game that came out in February. There's the port that I've reviewed, which is the DS port. And I mean, there's some other smaller stuff, but I mean,
don't we have like what's this game called, Unchained Blades? Is it by Xseed? They're bringing that to the eShop actually.
Yes, there's Unchained Blades, there's X Zone, whatever that thing is called.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there are RPGs coming to the 3DS. It's just right now, if you want to play games this minute, there is a lot of stuff on the PSP that will take you a long time to get through.
It's not an RPG, but Monster Hunter 4. Coming to the 3DS, so there's always that to think of as well.
Yes. I think for us, that's it this week. As always, you can send your emails to rfn@nintendoworldreport.com. We are always looking for new email that we can read on the show and respond to. We also have a slate of podcasts on our site, nintendoworldreport.com. We have always TYP's Radio Trivia Podcast Edition, where he will play music, and you will have to guess what song it is from, along with his guest, who will sit there just as baffled as you, hopefully. we have Connectivity and the Connectivity News Bites, which are small feature-based discussions from other members of the Nintendo World Report staff.
Connectibites.
Connectibites. That's a horrible name. I'm not saying that. And as, of course, you can always go to NintendoWorldReport.com for news, reviews, previews, impressions, feature articles, and stuff occasionally written by me, like what's coming up this week about Zelda. Yeah, be ready for that. And I think that's all for us, unless, Billy, you have something you'd like to plug.
No, I'm good. You can find me on Twitter, @LouisTheCat.
Excellent.
Mine Twitter name, PandariusNWR.
And, of course, I'm NWR_James. You can follow me for all your commentary on announcers for men's professional baseball, men's professional softball, and hot dog eating contests. For us, that'll do it for us this week. Thanks for listening, and come back next week. Billy, thanks for being on the show with us this week and filling in for the total lack of Johns. With that, we'll be signing off. Bye.
Bye.
Cool.
But actually, like the Sony store, the
which there are a
what's
sizable
it called again?
Number
PSN.
Of UMDs
the PSN store has
Hello.
Been really, really good with different sales. They often
Hello.
Have publisher themed sales, and right now, actually, this month. Oh fuck!
Poor call. Let's try to call everybody back.
Hello? Hello? Hello?
Yo.
Can you guys hear me?
I never stopped recording, by the way.
That's good. I didn't either.
Hello? Ah, oh, you bitch.
Guillaume's not here. I can't talk to Guillaume.
He got disconnected.
Yeah. Guillaume answered the phone.
Hello.
Hey, there we go.
Oh,
awesome.
Cool.
Where did I cut off?
Thanks for listening, and come back next week. Billy, thanks for having us on. Goodbye.
Bye. Isn't that like the opposite? Thanks
it
for
is.
Being
it
on.
It's terrible.
Thanks
was
for
that?
Having. You said thanks for having us on. So like I
sorry,
was.
Sorry, I'll do that again. Billy, thanks for being on the show with us this week and filling in for the total lack of Johns.